Welcome to the Endurance Town USA Project. This podcast, along with our blogs and adventure team, travel around the world creating and sharing the stories of humans changing lives through endurance sports. Today, we're excited to introduce a new mini-series, Running Across America, featuring the stories of four diverse American transcontinental runners, all motivated for different reasons to run across the United States of America. We will explore the who, when, what, and why of their stories and help listeners inspire a spark deep within themselves to go discover what is possible. This is Endurance Town USA.
Bring it back. All right. Hey, Samantha Pruitt from Endurance Town USA here too with two of my favorite people in the universe and teammates from 1,000 Miles to Light on Team USA, Shan Riggs and Katie Visco. What's up, humans?
What up?
Hi.
Hi, guys. Miss your beautiful faces.
Miss you too.
Yeah, after living together and all our crazy shenanigans. Today, we're going to talk about both of you individually at different times having different, radically different experiences running across the United States of America. And so I want to just start off by saying, before we get into what that looked like for each of you and hear a little bit about your story, Katie in Arizona, who are you? What are you up to? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm in Tucson, Arizona. This is where I live with my husband. We have no pets, no kids, don't want any of them. And we, and we just really enjoy life and travel and cooking good food and drinking coffee and tea. And I love people and I love running. And all these stories and the stories that you glean from people, Sam, are fantastic. So I am happy to be here and share my story and hear Shan's story.
All right. Welcome. Shan Riggs, what's up, my brother? Who are you?
I'm Shan. I'm 42. I'm living in Connecticut right now with my partner. But I've lived all over the United States, a bunch of different places, including my camper van for over a year total. And been running ultra marathons for 15-ish years, but then also do a lot of these kind of expedition, trying to think up weird things that nobody else has done kind of stuff. So I've done a bunch of those too.
I love it. I love it. I know it's, we think that we're normal people because we really are. We are the normal ones, just to be clear. And the ones sitting on the sofa, eating Ben and Jerry's, watching Netflix, maybe not so much, but anyway. Okay. So let's get started. Katie, you did your run first. Tell us when you did it, how old were you, and just the nuts and bolts about that run.
Sure. So it was 2009 and I was 23 years old. It was the youngest woman to run across America at the time. There have been plenty of people who have done it since then. And so the nuts and bolts were, it was a long journey. I don't know if anyone's run across the United States as slow and long as I did, but it was 9 months. And so the reason for that is because I wanted to talk to as many people as possible. and so it was honestly less about the running, and granted, like I had wanted to run across America or do some long expedition thing for a while, like all through high school, like later years in high school and college. And so it was a vehicle to do something that was beyond the running, which was to talk to as many people as possible about what they felt their passions were and how they could apply their passions to either be of service or simply just apply their passions in life to anything, like just do something about the things that they care about. And so it was mostly running in the morning. And then by the afternoon, it would be, you know, a group of kids at a school or a group of adults talking about what gives us life in life. So it was just like roundtable discussions or speaking in front of big groups of kids. So the afternoons were in front of people and with people.
Got it. And you did this right out of college, correct?
I did it a year after college.
Yeah. Okay. And you had never done anything like this before in your life. You were running, recreationally running, but you'd never done anything this outrageous or this, you know, in terms of physically or mentally in your life.
Yeah. I would say, no, this was the first of what came to be many crazy things or adventures or what Shan says, you know, expeditions. So it was the first. Yeah.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Glen Ellyn, Illinois, which is technically not Chicago, but I say it's Chicago.
Definitely Shan. Not Chicago.
Shan. I did that for you.
I lived
Shan.
In Chicago.
Shan knows more about Chicago than I do. So anyway, yeah, it's about 20 miles west of Chicago. So it's, you know, a really, really nice place. And so I grew up with loving parents. I still have my parents. I loved my experience growing up. High school was the best time of my life.
Wow.
Just like really finding my groove. And I have running to thank for that because I made the best relationships in running and on the team. I just loved growing up the way I did. And I feel grateful and fortunate for it. A lot of love.
Well, so your parents or your family environment, your community and school environment were really nurturing in terms of creating this radical human that we have today, like just full of passion, full of life, full of what is possible and incredibly brave.
Yeah, I have my parents to thank for just like really saying like, hey, oh, you have that idea? We're a little scared about it, but you can do it. You can do it. And so just really instilling in me that, yes, anything I put my mind to is possible. And then I have friends and running to thank for thinking outside the box and being a little weird, because we all just kind of had creative ideas and we supported each other at the time. Like in high school, we did weird creative things. it was just weird. And it was expressive and I loved it. I was myself.
I love it. I love it. Shan, what about you? Where did you grow up and what was the environment for you that made you into the human that we have today?
I grew up on a farm in Indiana, close to Indianapolis. The thing that it instilled is just the ability to do hard things and work hard and all that sort of stuff. So, I did run track and cross country. I wasn't especially great at it. Really what got me into these kind of crazy runs is I read, probably in 2005 or 6, Dean Karnazes's book, Ultra Marathon Man. And I think a lot of people would read that book and think that's just insane. And I read it and I thought I could do that. I'd never done anything longer than a marathon. And I'd finished a marathon and thought, you know, check that box. That was really hard. Couldn't imagine going any faster or farther until I got that kind of inspiration. And then started running, did 50 mile in Chicago. It was my first one. And then I realized I could not only be able to do it, but might be able to be competitive. And so kind of got the bug there and worked my way up to finally winning that race that was my first one in Chicago, and went back a couple times and did that. So, that's the trajectory. And then, like I said, eventually at some point had enough crazy friends that we were doing things like, has anybody run the length of Illinois before? And so we went and did that. I did a 200 mile run for Medals for Metal, from Chicago to Indianapolis all in one go. And that really sparked the idea of being able to do these crazy runs, not just to do them, which is one of the reasons why I like to do them, is just to do it, see if we can, but also to raise money and awareness for charity. So so it was a little different than Katie in that, you know, her running across the country was like, you know, kind of a first time, or she was pretty new at it. I worked my way up to it.
yeah. Katie's like, what the hell? Let's go tomorrow.
took me 15, 16 years of kind of working my way up. Awesome. from a 50 mile to 100 mile to running across Indiana to running across Panama to, you know, doing these kinds of things before we finally did the big one.
So Shan, you did yours last year, correct? During the pandemic.
Yep. Right in the middle of the pandemic, and mostly because I had the time. I was living in Connecticut, just got my dream job a year before with the Hartford Marathon Foundation as their VP of sponsorship. And I also had a pretty busy side business of consulting for the sponsorship and marketing for a variety of organizations that were primarily event focused. Mm-hmm. So towards the middle of 2020, there was no events and most of my business had dried up. So I thought, you know, well, I've got the time. And there was also this great need of food needs. So I've focused my run on Food Share, which is part of Feeding America. Thought, you know, at least this is something I could do and maybe I can help a little bit while I'm sitting in my apartment twiddling my thumbs because there's no work. So. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And Katie, when you planned yours, you were tied to a nonprofit, Girls on the Run, correct? Or were they just working with you for these speaking engagements?
Yes, I knew I wanted to also raise money for charity. And so that was kind of a long process in figuring out who to raise money for, because I'm a little skeptical about like where money goes. And so I remember doing a bunch of research and came across Girls on the Run, and it was just like the perfect fit. Just taking mostly middle school, elementary school girls, taking them out running after school, but in the process, really talking to them about like how to be a strong, you know, mentally, physically, maybe even emotionally, girl, woman.
Yeah.
Like how to stand up to bullies and what is self-respect and et cetera, et cetera. So yes, I did raise funds for them.
And when you were speaking at schools, what was the age group?
Oh, the age group was anywhere from like really young kids to, I don't know. I think second grade must've been the youngest. Those were always hilarious. Questions that they would ask.
I have a feeling any age group that you were talking to was hilarious because you were the one speaking.
So fun. And fun. All the way from like second grade up definitely through high school. High school was probably the target. With elementary and middle as well thrown in. Some college and then the adult population.
Mm. So when you go and talk to one of these groups, obviously that's a huge age spread and comprehension and experience and all that stuff. But what's the gist about what you would talk about?
I just remember trying to make it really close to home for the, if we talk about the kids, just trying to make it really close to home. And so it would be highly interactive. Like I would make kids come up and stand next to me and interview them kind of up on the stage. Like, what is something that you really like to do? Or something you really, really care about. And so I remember having just kids up there with me and they would share themselves. And it was kind of just going from there. Like, okay, fielding the audience, trying to have the kids source the answers as to, okay, what can Enrique do with his love for like petting dogs? Like it's hilarious what these kids love to do, you know? Totally. And most of them wanted to become professional athletes.
Of course they did.
Yeah. But it doesn't matter. It's like the exercise of thinking how to apply something to doing it. It was mostly interactive, Sam. Yeah.
Did they have to run before you had this talk? Was a running always part of it or not necessarily?
No, running was pretty much mostly not part of it, except when I visited Girls on the Run. So it was just going into a school assembly or like Mr. Johnson's third and fourth grade class. It was whatever was available, I'd do it.
Did that really determine the course that you took? Because you guys both took different courses as well.
So for me, I started in Boston and I knew I wanted to go home to Glen Ellen. So through Chicago. And then from there, I wanted to go as south as soon as possible because it was approaching winter. And so it was just like, pick San Diego. Let's finish there. Sure. Whatever. And so there was always a school along the way, like in the middle of Kansas, there's always people, there's always kids. So the route was dictated by me. And then we found the people along the way. I found the people along the way.
Okay. And did you know it was going to take 9 months? Was that your intention or were you like, I'll get there when I get there?
I knew I wanted 9 months. Yeah.
Okay. Like having a baby. You wanted to give birth at the end in San Diego.
Yeah.
And Shan, how did you determine your route and specifically what nonprofit you were going to get, you know, on the business of raising money for.
Yeah. So I decided that it was going to run across the country about August 1st, something like that. And I knew immediately I wanted to have it be for Food Share, because I've been working with Food Share in Connecticut through the Hartford Marathon Foundation for over a year. And their need had gone up, I think, like 300% or something like that. And so they were distributing, I volunteered with them. They were distributing food in Rentschler Field, which is a football stadium. And so it was just to see all these people that had never needed food assistance before, you know, driving in and they're, you know, being BMWs and Mercedes and things like that. You know, they clearly had gone into 2020 not expecting to need to be going and getting food. So I knew right away I wanted to work with them. And I also had a group of sponsors that I could pick up quickly. I'd already been working with them. So it was people like Goo Energy and Stop and Shop, which is a large grocery store chain here, Two Toms and some other stuff. That was within the first few days is kind of putting all that together. And I was fortunate just because that's what I do. I had a friend of mine, Callie Vinson, who helped put together a website real quick. She volunteered to drive the van. We got that secured. And then I sold all my possessions. I was living in an apartment. So I sold everything that wouldn't fit in the van. I knew I wanted to end in Connecticut, because that way I'd be coming towards where our sponsors are, where we knew media would be there, and helping our charity, of course. And so I knew I wanted to end in Connecticut, and just because of the time of year, starting on September 1st, thought the ideal weather would be good if we went straight from San Francisco. We had a lot of friends in Boulder, so went through Boulder, also Chicago. I lived in Chicago off and on for about 17 years, so knew I was going to go through there. And then other than that, just kind of went as straight it over as we could. And I think it ended up being 3,250 something miles. So
how many
it wasn't
days?
The shortest. I think 90. So averaged about 40 miles a day. Most days were over 40, but when you average some others, it ended up being around 40. I also had, had a couple planned rest days, and we ended up actually, slowing down a little bit for the last three, 4 weeks, because we wanted to end on Giving Tuesday, which is the Tuesday after Thanksgiving, try to really drive as much awareness and donations as we could for Food Share. And that ended up working out pretty well. So when we got into Connecticut, literally every news outlet in the state, all three major TV networks, print, radio, everybody was there following along, including the last day, which I ended at Food Share the day before the last day. And then I ran from their Food Share headquarters 47 miles to the coast in Connecticut. So ended up being we got a lot of focus and a lot of donations in that last kind of couple of weeks.
Yeah. And also that's your personality, 90 days. I mean, you just drop the hammer, dude. That's just what you do. You're literally like dropping the hammer every time we see you in action. So I don't know if you could have really slowed yourself down because went, right?
Yeah, going into it, had no real idea of exactly what the distance would be. So sometimes people will ask, you know, did you spend a lot of time, you know, on your route and all that? I did go and I asked a lot of people, like Pete Kostelnik and Marshall Ulrich and some other people that had done it, just to kind of get their thoughts. But as far as specific route and speed, I didn't really have a plan. I wanted it to be challenging, but I didn't want to kill myself. I wasn't going to go for a record. I'd seen how much it's kind of really, the people that try to do that, they're just total wreck by the time you get to the end. And it was too important to, the most important thing was to make it.
Absolutely.
Because we had to get to Connecticut so that we'd be able to get the right amount of visibility and donations. And so that was important. But I also wanted to be a good, strong run. I want to be able to see the country and challenge myself, but also not just be a complete wreck. So that ended up being about 40 miles a day. So that's enough where it was hard. At the end of every day, though, I was done usually between 3 and 5. And so we had time to rest and sit around and eat a lot. Yeah.
Another thing you do really well.
We have to when you run across the country.
Well, Katie had a little bit different experience. So you were more relaxed, obviously. Your effort was about how many people can I connect to? I care deeply about this cause. How many conversations can I have? What was a day looking like for you in terms of starting? What time did you finish? You're a big fan of eating real meals too. So I want to know how you fit all that in.
Sure. Yeah. So each day started early. I think at the beginning, I started a little bit later and would kind of like the first month or 3 weeks, I remember starting, I don't know, 6 or 7 and kind of taking the whole day to run and see people along the way and not just wait until the afternoon because it was New England and it was like a lot of people. So you just kind of fit them in where you could, even if it was throughout the day. But as I got past Chicago, it was more spread out. And so most of it was wake up early, maybe start running before sunrise. So it was like running in the dawn, which was beautiful. And then really try to get all the miles done by noon or at the latest 1.
Okay.
And then, so I did have support in a vehicle. It was a friend from college. And so she would meet me where we would finish. And then sometimes we would hub and spoke to a particular person who would be hosting us for the night. So we stayed with people the whole time. So we didn't stay in hotels. We didn't camp. It was just with random people that we would connect with along the way. And so, yeah, it was really about morning miles and then afternoon people. And we would use the vehicle to drive to the speaking engagements or to the host's home.
How would you determine where you were going to sleep? How were you finding these people you were going to sleep with?
Yeah. So I remember this was before like cell phones. And I remember like getting this weird stick thing to put into my laptop to try to find service in the middle of somewhere.
Oh, the internet.
Yeah. And to try to find the internet. And it was this big, bulky stick thing. And so I would wait for it to bleep, 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 bleep. And so then I would be able to have internet like in the van throughout the day to connect to running clubs along the way or schools or like friends of friends. It was kind of like a snowball effect too. You meet someone in Chicago who has a friend in Kansas. And so they rally their people or the running club rallies their people a little bit down the road. That's when it got to be really cool. Like after a month, it's almost like everybody knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody.
And was that a good experience for you? Just kind of not really knowing where you're going, but at the same time having a general idea and just that whole free spirit experience. You didn't have any bad experiences with that sort of relaxed way of being in the world?
No bad experiences. We had a few very, very strange experiences.
Only a few?
Very strange. Like a couple.
What? UFOs?
I remember. Oh. I remember it was in Kansas.
Okay.
And there was a tornado coming or something.
Wizard of Oz, Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. Okay.
Something. And I don't know how we ended up staying with these people. Maybe it was a friend of a friend or we just met them. I'm not sure. But they put us up in the attic to sleep.
Okay.
And a tornado's coming. So they put us up in the attic. And the attic is full of like taxidermied animals and like tons of antlers. And so I just remember this image. I was talking to Ellen who drove the van. I was like, Ellen, if a tornado hits, we're going to get speared in the eyeballs with antlers.
Yes.
And it was just such a strange experience because we didn't really, it was awkward. I don't know. Yeah. Like the couple was just eating downstairs in front of the TV while we were upstairs sleeping or hanging out. Yeah. I don't know.
It wondering was the, if you were going to die in the hurricane. And yeah. Like a tornado. They're like, whatever, let's just, you know, eat our TV dinner and go to bed.
Yeah. But super kind people. It was just a weird experience. Like couldn't really connect. And that was the only people that we really, really couldn't connect with. But it was a funny, it made for a good story.
And Shan, where did you end up sleeping in the van then?
Most of the time in the van, we're kind of all over the place. I'd like to just park where I end at the end of the day. And then that way just get up out of the van and go. So that was probably most of the time. So that, and sometimes that's why my mileage varied from day to day. It's like, if we found a good place to park, it was around 40 miles, give or take. We would do that. So side of the road, rest stops. We would sometimes reach out to people ahead of time and people come out and run with us or give us a place to park or whatever. So we did that. And then later, once we got into November, we got some donations of hotel rooms because it started to get pretty cold. I also got really sick, for a couple of days, with food poisoning. So you got to watch where you eat, where you eat.
yeah, you do. How were you even staying on top of your caloric consumption? I mean, you're not a big guy and you demand a ton of calories. So how are you making that happen?
We were measuring I was eating about 4,500 calories a day. I guess the basic day to day was I'd get up. I don't usually like to eat breakfast, but I would get a goose droop waffle or something. And I would just head out the van as quickly as I could. And then I would go 10 miles down the road, and Callie was cooking stuff a lot of times in the van. I had a little 2-burner stove in there. And so we focused on protein. So have a breakfast with like a lot of like eggs and vegetables midday, maybe a sandwich or something like that at 20 miles. And then at 30 miles, have a snack of whatever it could stomach and do it quickly. And then then a huge dinner, which was probably more than half the calories was at night while I'm sitting around, maybe 300 or 400 calories worth of beer. And then whatever we could eat. It wasn't my normal diet. You know, at home I'm eating mostly salad, and other vegetables. Yeah. And you just can't get enough doing that. So, on the road, it was a much more good fats, you know, nuts, protein, I did eat a lot more meat than normal. And I lost 12 pounds.
Oh, okay.
I think a lot of the weight I lost was muscle mass, because I wasn't doing any exercises other than running, and I'm usually doing arm workouts and things like that. So I think most of what I lost was up there, maybe a few pounds worth of fat. I definitely wasn't skinny by the end. I certainly was fine. I was actually a little bit above my preferred race weight. I'd intentionally gained about 12 pounds before I started. So I basically lost that weight by the time I got to the end.
I think that's pretty common, huh? People try and bulk up, especially before a multi, day or week expedition, because they know they're just going to melt away.
Yeah, I was
hoping.
You
should have drank more beer, Shan. You just didn't stay on top of the beer consumption.
I thought I was going to lose those little love handles by the time I got but instead I lost my chest and my back muscles.
That's okay. You're young. It'll all come back. Katie, what in the heck were you eating? You're like, you have a very specific nutritional needs. What were you eating? Or maybe at 23, you didn't. Maybe you were like doing McDonald's. I don't know.
Definitely not McDonald's. I would just say as much as possible. And so I don't think I was as picky back then, but I remember starting the day with a huge bowl of cereal. Like as long as the day started with cereal, like multiple kinds of cereal in a bowl with milk, before all this plant-based milk stuff, there was milk, people, there was milk. And so cereal, and then like Shan, sandwiches for lunch, like big sandwiches. And then dinner was mostly pretty much like whatever the host was making. So we had fried like testicles one night from
Really? Fried testicles from exactly what animal? I assume it's not a human. From what animal?
It was like some guy who won the testicle festival. This was like the panhandle of Texas or Oklahoma, wherever I
Wait,
was.
A testicle festival? Excuse me, what?
He won it, and so he made us testicles. Oh, so we ate testicles with pasta and stuff. So that was like not up to my own devices. It was just eating whatever they served and eating as much as possible.
How many testicles did you eat? How many testicles did you eat, Katie?
I don't know. I tried them.
They were probably from a sheep. I heard that's kind of a big thing. Yeah. In some countries, it's a thing, right? So that's probably the weirdest thing that you ate the entire time. The testicles.
Yeah.
Or was there something more strange than that that were willing to eat?
That.
Okay. Shan, what's the weirdest thing that you ate, Shan?
I don't remember eating a lot of weird stuff. I mean, I wouldn't eat a lot. I mean, and it really a lot, like a large pizza by myself.
Wow.
I did that multiple times and then ate after that. So I could definitely eat more than 2,000, sometimes 3,000 calories in a sitting. So
that's why you were starving to death in Australia, because we could not get enough calories. It wasn't even possible. Maybe we should have ordered the testicles.
That sounds calorie dense, you know.
They are,
and full of testosterone. Hey, there's a side perk to those whole testicle appetizers. So that's the weirdest food thing you ate. What's the strangest experience you had, Katie, while you were out there on the road? Like, what was the strangest thing besides the fact you could have been, you know, Dorothy from the Wizard of Oz going up into a tornado?
You know, that was definitely the strangest experience.
Okay.
What I described earlier. I don't think I don't remember having strange experiences other than that one, but I do remember kind of bridging on strange, which was alarming for me at the time, like a young woman, like feeling like out of my element when I was running through parts of one particular state in which like we were warned of there being a lot of meth in the area. And so we were running about a day and a half through what looked to be just like really dilapidated out in the nowhere homes. And I remember being chased by multiple dogs, and it was very, very alarming to me and felt extremely unsafe. So I would say that's the only time I felt unsafe, and it had to do with dogs or drugs. Or my perception of those things.
What about you, Shan?
I'd say a few things. I think one, for anybody running any kind of long distance that's in the countryside, the most dangerous things are there are dogs, number one, and number two, cars, probably. And you'd have these close moments, especially if you're running on the left side of the road and somebody passes another car, and then that car goes whizzing right by you next to your elbow. I with dogs, my approach was always to treat them nicely until they got close and they're still barking and yelling, and then you yell and scream at them. And fortunately, in this run, I never had to fight a dog, but I have had some really close calls in some of my other expeditions. And on the danger side, one thing that I took away from running, a very USA thing, I guess, is every single day I heard gunfire. Every day of the run, including in Oakland the day before we started. I was staying at a friend's house in his front room with the window open, and there was a shooting right next door. A drive-by, pop, dove to the ground, and police were there soon. So the other, I also ran by a police shooting on the second day in California. There was a guy in a RV that had been driving recklessly. There was probably some mental health thing, and I was less than a block away when they opened fire with rubber bullets, which at the time I didn't know until I read in the news later that they were rubber bullets. And I was right, very close. Everybody went running. So the rest of the gunfire was mostly hunting, I presume. But I even had one, was on the side of the road, I think in Utah, right next to a sign that said no shooting from the road.
And a guy
comes out of his truck and says, do you mind if I shoot my gun? And he's firing off the road at deer out in the bush. I picked up several bullets. If I would have picked up all the bullet casings, they'd probably have a 5 gallon bucket's worth at least. So that's one just thing that you just have to realize that's an American thing. But on the other side, you know, those are some of the kind of weird, unique American things, but there's also the majestic side of, I saw bald eagles in every state. I saw wild turkeys in every state. And it was really exciting to see the bald eagles, because when I was a kid, they only existed in Alaska. So, you know, and a bunch of other, of course, wildlife, and get to see the stars and in Nevada and, you know, the mountains and, you know, Purple Majesty, all that kind of stuff. So it was mostly good, but then, you know, every day gunfire rings out in America.
It does. What about human beings? Katie, can you think of one or two people that you met along the way that had a big impact on you? That touched you in some way?
Yes. There was a woman and a girl, two separate instances. The woman, she is definitely someone I keep in touch with regularly to this day. She's in Texas. And so I remember her because she was incredibly supportive, like just so about the mission and everything. But also I remember sitting at her kitchen table early in the morning before we left her house, because she did host us. Her name is Celine, and she was expressing to me her like troubles in her life. And I just remember, like, I'm this young woman, like, doing this thing. And I felt so on purpose that this adult opened up to me at this time to speak honestly about her life. And, you know, like the things that she would say, or, you know, I don't remember exactly, but I just remember them being so honest and, you know, vulnerable about her life and her kids and everything. And so that was really special. And then I remember a girl back in California. So this was like a few weeks before I finished. She also opened up in a way in which left an impact on me. Like, these are just examples of how this run was incredibly confirming for me. Like, I know that I'm doing this because it's needed. And I know that I'm doing this because it's a song in my heart. Like, I have to do this. I have to do this. So people like that kept me going. And those are just two people that I remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, it's almost like your run was a conversation from start to finish.
It was a conversation. It was absolutely.
Wow. And then when you concluded, there must have been this experience of, you know, I don't want to say depression. Some people do suffer from a big event, you know, having a little down spell afterwards is totally normal. But like, how did you process all of that experience and all of those conversations, that collective conversation, and then integrate it into your life?
That's an easy question to answer because I just kept going. So I finished. So this was the tipping point for me, like that run that just like fueled everything that came next. So did more runs for the same reason, like whether it be solo with myself on a, like with a backpack or with a friend on a bicycle, or like just a few years ago with my husband on a bicycle. So I just kept going because it was, like I said, so confirming that what I was doing was needed in this world. And I wanted to keep talking to people. And so I kept doing runs. Like, Shan and I are like the inverse of each other. Like, you led up to the America, and America was the tipping point for me, where everything came after it.
Yes. Yes. And you just decided to go big right out of the gate. Didn't need to, you know, overly plan or overly think through, because bravery is a big thing that you stand for. So you wanted to act from that point from the very beginning, and then you continue to, so you can have those conversations with others and inspire them to be more brave in their own life. What does that look like for you now?
So Sam, you're awesome. What a way to pull it together. What does it look for me now? I think just regardless of what I'm doing with my professional life or what I'm doing in life, I think it's just a matter of how I think about how I feel. And if I think that it's all just a passing thought, like it's there, it's telling me something, interesting, that's one way to think about it. But if I have a feeling or if I have a thought and I take it seriously, and I think about how can I use this to implement it in some kind of action in my life. Like, I guess what I'm saying is, what am I doing now? I just take myself seriously when my heart speaks, when my thoughts tell me something. Like, I don't brush things off. I listen to myself, whether it's in a conversation with another person, like on the street, or if it's in my professional life, or if it's when I think about the big things I want to do or experience in this life. So, like, yes, I like to go with the flow and have fun and I'm spontaneous, but I do take myself seriously. And I think that's really important.
Yeah. And you really are just, you know, you're so young still and you have so much ahead of you. Is there anything in particular that you have planned coming up or long-term or short-term in the future?
Yeah, I would say on the adventure side of things, my husband and I would really like to bike around the world. This is not a running thing. It's just
around the world.
We want to bike around the world. And so that'll happen in maybe 2, 3 to 5 years would be way too late for me, I'd say. Emily,
she's looking at Emily right now. He's going, what?
So I gotta say, like, I've commandeered this dream from Henley because he's wanted to bike around the world for probably 10 years now. And so I definitely want to do that as a couple, to have that. Basically what I'm saying, yes, it's on a bike, but the point of it is to be gone for at least a year. To be so immersed in the adventure, in the travel, in the away from homeness.
Yeah.
That we're just so in each culture that we would go to. So that's on the adventure side. Yes. Other than that, I just want to live a really good, true life every single day.
Yes. And you're doing it.
Yes.
You're doing it. What about you, Shan? Did you meet any humans along the way that had a big impact on you?
You know, it was just inspiring that the whole time people would come out and want to run or give money for food share, or we had a couple give us products that they grew at their farm. It was kind of like a gift basket and things like that. So that was inspiring, especially the last day, because we did get so much publicity. There was just dozens of people along the road that would literally pull over and say, "Hey, I saw you on TV," and they'd give me a bottle of water and a $20 bill, you know. So,
Stuff
like so. So that was a lot of fun, and it was mostly strangers. So it was even in the middle of nowhere, people would be like, "Didn't I see you running yesterday? Where are you going?" You know, things like that.
Are you Forrest Gump?
Yeah, I did get that. So
I'm sure.
One thing for people that are thinking about this kind of thing, I made up stickers that had our logo on it. Shan runs Cross America, and part of that was for giving it to police. So a lot of times police would stop and just ask what the heck were we doing out there, because it's places that nobody is out, you know, nobody's doing it. And then our bands occasionally would get called in because people would, you know, wonder what it's doing at the end of the road kind of thing. And so I got real good at having my story ready, you know, running across the country for charity, here's a sticker, blah blah blah. So things like that.
And you did that as part of your life experience and raising money and awareness for this, you know, critical time during the pandemic, but you continue to bite off these wild and crazy adventures as well. Like Katie's going to continue to do. What's keeping you going? What's motivating?
Yeah. You know, it's, a lot of people I talked to did warn me about the, you know, the kind of the letdown at the end of something this big. And even knowing that was a common thing, I still dealt with that. I'd say there was probably a month where it's, because how do you top this, you know? But I decided eventually, I think like a lot of people, you know, after the pandemic and so many lives were disrupted, to kind of rearrange my professional life so I could have more time and flexibility to be able to go do these kinds of things more often. So, you know, I was able to go and, you know, run with you guys in Australia and be down there for 5-6 weeks. Now I'm planning, with my partner, we're going to run and she's going to bike the complete length of the Erie Canal next week. Awesome. So that'll be another like 11-12 day expedition. And we're planning another big one, next spring, hopefully another like 3 month kind of thing. So, so yeah, I definitely, have decided to kind of, you know, focus more on, you know, can I go do fun things and do good? And, you know, is there a way to make that happen professionally at the same time? Cause I'd always dreamed of running across the country, but, really never thought I'd have time. You know, thought, well, maybe when we retire, you know, that kind of thought.
Yeah.
But then by the time you get to then, will you have the physical capability of doing it when you're in your 60s? You know, so not all of us are Marshall Ulrich who continues to run in
well,
60s,
Shan,
70s.
Someone who's listening to this, who's never done anything remotely adventurous, full day, never mind multi-day, what's your advice to them in terms of getting started?
I think just with anything, just get up and move all day to start. So
how about move for an hour?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be running, walking. I mean, if you're talking about getting off the couch, even then, I think a lot of times people think, oh my God, it hurts to run so much. Just walk then. Run when you can, walk if you have to, but just keep continue that motion.
Yeah.
Bike, just anything that keeps you up and going. So that you feel comfortable moving around all day long. And just everything in life is better if you can wake up in the morning and know that you could be moving all day. You know, if you can get to the point where you can literally be running all day, it makes everything else in life a lot easier. It makes getting up and going to work easier. It makes just any of the hardships easier because you know that you could do tough things.
Exactly.
And it doesn't take, you know, it's not a superhuman thing. I tell everybody, it just takes practice.
Yeah.
Sometimes that could sound like I'm diminishing it, but it really, anybody could do it. It just takes practice. It takes a lot of practice. if you're going to be good at it, like anything, you have to practice, you know, several hours a day, most days of the week, if you really want to be good at it, but, just to go do it, you know, it's just takes some effort a few times a week over and over and over again.
Yeah. Consistency. What about you, Katie? What would you say to people who are interested in a more adventurous lifestyle, who've never done anything like this, maybe not even, you know, spent a day out in the outdoors? What would you say? How can you get them inspired?
Well, my first inclination with that question is to kind of go to the thought process and like starting there with somebody. And, you know, you hear this all the time, but like, why do you want to lead a more adventurous lifestyle? What could that look like for you? But first and foremost, why? And I really love what Shan just said, that he rearranged his professional life so that he could put a priority that has become a priority.
Yeah.
Into his life more often. And I think that anyone thinking about how can I live a more adventuresome life, the question is, what are you willing to trade off in order to gain that adventurous life, regardless of what that adventurous life could look like? But are you willing to make changes? And what small, tiny change could you make to start? Like, I'm asking myself the same question, you know, now with a full-time job, it's like, when will I be able to, and how can I maneuver this job so that I can keep my priority of adventure?
Yeah.
You know, just as important as living a good, sound life, you know, I think it's very tricky. I do. I think it's very tricky when you have like multiple priorities. So, and just to wrap up, the question is like, the question I got the most with any adventure I've ever done that takes, you know, more than a day is, how do you find the time to do it? Or what job do you have that allows you to do this? Mm-hmm. And so the question, the answer is like, I created it, just like Shan has said that he's created it. Yes. And so I suppose that's my answer. It's like, what are you willing to change in your life in order to make what you desire happen, even just a little bit?
Agreed. You have to make space, right? If you want something in your life to look different, irrelevant of what the thing is, then you need to make space for that. And generally that does mean, you know, something else maybe has to go. And there's no shortage of things that we waste time on, us human beings. So there is always space. But yeah, it's a matter of prioritizing and then committing and really moving forward with it. You know, the consistency, like Shan said, is critical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. This was great. I have a last question for each of you. Let's see who should go first. Where's my roulette wheel? Let's go Shan first. Shan Riggs, my brother, what does endurance mean to you?
What does endurance mean to me? Oh, it's sticking with something until it's done.
Woo! Hell yes! Okay, Katie, my sister, what does endurance mean to you?
Sticking with something until it's done. No. But no, seriously, like sticking with something until you know it's done. And if it means that you got it to the finish line, great. If that's your done, great. If it means you had to pivot because you realize that's not your priority, then great. But sticking with something until you find your truth or you make it to your real finish until it's done, when you feel that it's done.
I love it. I love it. Okay, you two, it was so good to see you again. Thank you for your time. It's gotten dark at Shan's house.
Yeah. Shan looks like an angel.
Shan is an angel. Oh, that's cool. Party lights.
Wow. Party lights. So very nice cool. out there.
Very cool. All right. Where can people find you, Shan Riggs? Where can they find you and follow your story? Because the story continues.
Yep. ShanRunsAcrossAmerica.com. All my contact info is there, you know, social, all that stuff. I also have a pretty unique name, S-H-A-N, Shan Riggs, R-I-G-G-S. So I'm very hard to, I'm a very Googleable person. So easy to track down.
Awesome. Katie, where can they find you and follow your shenanigans?
Oh gosh. KatieVisco.com or
all the socials.
Come to my house. Come on over. Like, can I cook you dinner? I'm here. I'm really here.
Well, if we're running through Tucson and we need a place to crash when we're running across America, you call
Katie.
Please
contact me. But yeah, there's the website. And like Shan said, it's Instagram, Katie Visco.
All right.
Got me a line. Call, email.
Come okay, over. Beautiful humans. That's a wrap for us. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Sam.
Miss you
both. Thanks, Sam.
Bye. Aww.
Thank you for connecting with us for this episode of the Endurancetown USA Project. Discover more about today's guest, along with other great stories and video projects, by visiting us online at EndurancetownUSA.com. You can also follow us for updates and behind-the-scenes peeks at future episodes on Instagram at EndurancetownUSA. You can also connect with our creator, host, and life leadership and business coach, Samantha Pruitt, at SamanthaPruitt.com or on Instagram at TheSamanthaPruitt. And lastly, you can follow me, Travis Ford, producer and marketing creative at RockHarborMarketing.com or Instagram at RockHarborMarketing. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time we go on an adventure to Endurancetown, USA.
Bring it back.